Pull up a chair and buckle up. It's the Original Strength Podcast. Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's edition of the Original Strength Podcast. We have a super, super special show for you today. We have Mr. Patrick McEwen, who is the author of The Oxygen Advantage. Patrick, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're very welcome, Tim. Good to be here.
So listen, you are without a doubt changing the world. You are helping people breathe better, improve their health and the quality of their lives. And the Oxygen Advantage is probably one of the most, I would say it's probably one of the most top resources right now for breathing that's out there. How did you get started in all of this?
I came across by accident. It was primarily because of my own health issues. It wouldn't have been an area that I would have taught in. My background was in economics. My background was in the corporate world. But, you know, even though, like, I was very driven, the corporate world wasn't for me anyway. And I felt that just, you know, I was kind of, I suppose, like many youngsters, you know, you're in your early 20s, you go into a job that you've really no idea where you're going. And at the same time, I had health issues, I had asthma, I had stuffy nose, I had really bad snoring. I had undiagnosed sleep apnea. I was tired. I was stressed. And very common. It's very common. And I came across in a newspaper article to breathe through the nose and to breathe light, not to be taking those full big breaths. And very often, you know, I was doing that and I was doing it intentionally because I believed, like many others, that the more air we breathe, the more oxygen that gets delivered throughout the body. And the more air we breathe, it has a calming effect on the mind. And I didn't realize that it's actually the opposite that's true.
So did you now, and with the Oxygen Advantage, you're teaching the Buteyko method?
Correct. Yeah. Well, the Buteyko method is focused primarily on the biochemistry.
Okay.
And with the Oxygen Advantage, we have more freedom. So, you know, like I can't change the Buteyko method. That was my original training. It's a wonderful method. But who am I to change it? At least with Oxygen Advantage, it gave me the freedom to bring in breathing techniques that were beneficial. So for example, we could bring in resonant frequency breathing into the Oxygen Advantage. We couldn't bring it into Buteyko method. It actually conflicts. Changing the pace of breathing doesn't work with Buteyko. It works with Oxygen Advantage. Improving the biomechanics is not part of the Buteyko method, but it is part of the Oxygen Advantage. So the Oxygen Advantage just gave me the freedom to bring in, to put a program together that's including the Buteyko method, but also looking at resonant frequency breathing, looking at the biomechanics, bringing in sleep. And we bring in, like there's more in terms of, you know, the application of breathing. The more that I work with breathing, the more I realize just how deep it is and how much I don't know. It's really vast. You know, even if you were just to tune in on sleep, that alone is a field in itself. And if we look at the application of functional breathing to sleep and to snoring and to obstructive sleep apnea, that's its own domain. If we look at the application of breathing to performance, such as focus, concentration, quietening the mind, improving resilience, that's its own domain. And if we look at then the application of it to heart rate variability, stimulating the vagus nerve, improving bodily systems or helping to recover bodily systems disturbed by stress. There's the biochemistry part of it. There's the biomechanical part of it. And just with the Oxygen Advantage, I suppose I wanted to get away from the whole aspects of in traditional breathing, instructors will work primarily how they were trained. So your yoga instructor, they teach primarily on that domain that they have been trained. Your heart rate variability instructor, they will focus primarily on resonant frequency breathing. Your Buteyko instructor is focusing mainly on the biochemistry. But we can't just focus on one dimension. We have to look at all three. And that's where the Oxygen Advantage gives me the freedom.
That's awesome. For your own personal journey, you said that you had your own health issues, the asthma and the stuffy nose and the sleep apnea.
Yes.
And you read this article about nasal breathing. What was that process like to like I guess it was like, I don't know. Was it exciting? Was it just like mind blowing? Like, and how long did it take for you to totally
understand? No, I suppose, understand? You know, like I remember reading it. I remember just being curious. And, you know, I didn't know, of course, was it true or not, because I knew that I wasn't breathing lightly and I wasn't nose breathing. I knew that much. I was the kid, if I was at a friend's house, I would be eating and breathing at the same time. And of course, the friend's parents wouldn't be very happy with that. And it's common with children if they have nasal congestion, because the child has to both breathe and eat through the mouth. And, you know, it doesn't help with table manners. But I tried the nose and blocking exercise. I got that online and it worked. And I started putting it into practice myself. And that night I wore a nasal dilator. I used a Breathe-Right strip and I taped my mouth closed using medical tape. And I woke up the next morning and kind of getting used to it. It was really the second night I wore the nasal dilator again and I taped my mouth closed. And I woke up the second morning and it was the best concentration and alertness and feeling refreshed that I had in 20 years. And I couldn't but get over it. This was back in 1998. That was what changed my life.
Wow.
My wheezing reduced by about 50% in 1 week. And that's not an exaggeration. It didn't cure my wheezing that week, but it certainly reduced it significantly. And all I did was I was absolutely, you know, persistent with maintaining nose breathing, not breathing through the mouth, going for a walk. And it was tough enough because I was feeling air hunger doing physical exercise with the mouth closed. I was feeling air hunger when I went to sleep that night, hence I wore the nasal dilator. But just that simple thing of switching from mouth to nose breathing, it literally did. It changed my life, both personally. And then it was a couple of years later that I decided actually that I would like to work in this field. So I changed careers. But before that, I was just using it for myself.
It's really amazing. Like, and I know you've heard this before, like in the Bible, it talks about how God breathed the breath of life into the nostrils.
The nostrils of man. Yes.
And like you literally experienced it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's despite that, and despite the fact that the mouth does absolutely nothing in terms of breathing. If you were to talk to a medical doctor and if you said, doctor, what does the mouth do for the breath? The answer is nothing. Zero. And yet many people are persistently mouth breathing. Look at all of the people doing physical exercise. 50% of people, I would say, are mouth breathing during sleep. I would say 90% of people are mouth breathing during exercise. We know 25 to 50% of studied children mouth breathe persistently. We don't have much of a figure with adults during wakefulness because I suppose they switch from nose to mouth, nose to mouth. We know that 75% of anxiety sufferers have dysfunctional breathing patterns, and their poor and faulty breathing is feeding back into their condition. So for people with asthma, you know, it doesn't make sense to breathe through the mouth because you're taking cold, dry, unfiltered air into your lungs and you're going to cause aggravation of your lungs. So mouth breathing will aggravate asthma. It doesn't make sense for people with anxiety to breathe fast and irregular mouth breathe, upper chest breathe, because that's going to feed into their symptoms. It doesn't make sense for sleep to breathe with an open mouth because our sleep is lighter and we're more likely to wake up feeling exhausted. And for children, the consequences are dreadful. You know, there's an 80% chance that children will have a 20% reduction in their mental capacity permanently. Wow. If they have sleep disorder breathing, and mouth breathing is a contributory factor to that. And I remember the founding father of sleep medicine, Dr. Christian Guimeneau. I was speaking in Paris back in 2016, and he was speaking there as well. And I remember him just say a very simple sentence. He said, we need engineers and we need accountants and we need all of these professions. But he said, children's brains are getting fried. That's what he said. And they're getting fried because of poor sleep. And yeah, it's just one of those things that the elephant in the room is breathing through the nose and nobody saw the elephant. And they still don't see the elephant. They still don't see it. You know, Brett now has become more popular. There's no question about it. You know, it's been interviewed on Joe Rogan's show, London Real, all of the top podcasts. You know, David Asprey was one of the first ones to get behind it. And all of the top podcasts are looking into breathing now. 20 years ago, that wasn't the case, you know. People talk when they heard about breathing, they thought it was, you know, for a bunch of tree huggers. Take a big breath, take a deep breath. And that was about the height of it, you know. So, and there's so much information out there. But even when you think about yoga instructors, and there are some wonderful yoga instructors, and we have many instructors who are yoga instructors. But oftentimes then, if I look at a clip of a yoga instructor, maybe on YouTube, and I'm watching, you know, I'm just curious, how is the yoga instructor telling the student to breathe? And you're hearing everybody in the class breathing. That doesn't make sense, because I could never ask a classroom full of people to start taking more air into their lungs, because as they breathe more air, their blood vessels constrict and less oxygen is getting delivered. So in actual fact, having students overbreathe is reducing their oxygen delivery, not increasing it.
Since you mentioned that, what does it mean to breathe light, to breathe right?
Yeah, so breathe light, there's a couple of different components to it. But the first one would be, you know, people can have a strong chemosensitivity to carbon dioxide. And carbon dioxide is the primary drive to breathe. And if we are overly sensitive to the accumulation of carbon dioxide, our breathing is faster, our breathing is harder, and our breathing is generally upper chest breathing. So this translates into increased breathlessness during physical exercise. But it also translates into faster breathing during rest. That in turn is going to agitate the mind. And also on a very simple level, people might have cold hands and cold feet. But if they breathe faster and harder, they're more likely to snore. And the increased negative pressure in the upper airway during sleep, they could have, for example, obstructive sleep apnea. So breathe light is about reducing the chemosensitivity of the body to carbon dioxide. So the foundation of it is to breathe through the nose, in and out through the nose, not to breathe in through the nose and out through the mouth. But nose breathing is the foundation. And then for short periods of time during the day, is to gently soften and slow down the speed of breathing, to take less air into the lungs, to expose the body to higher carbon dioxide, to create a feeling of air hunger. So the individual is gently slowing down their breathing. They take less air into their bodies. They feel air hunger. That's breathe light from a biochemical point of view. And we are exposing the body to increase carbon dioxide in order to reduce the sensitivity of the body to the accumulation of that gas, but also to teach and train the body how to breathe slower. And that works well on so many fronts. You know, you think of the athlete. An athlete might be gassing out too soon. They've got a low Bolt score. And no matter how hard they train, physical training doesn't change your breathing patterns. But it's how you breathe during rest, how you breathe during sleep, that influences how you breathe during physical exercise. So, you know, even just looking at the breath, if we get an athlete in with a Bolt score of 10 seconds, and many athletes with a Bolt score of 10 seconds, those athletes are breathing too hard for a given intensity of physical exercise. They are wasting energy unnecessarily. They are not economical with their breathing. They are more likely to have respiratory muscle fatigue. They are gassing out too soon. And also, the harder you breathe, it doesn't increase oxygen uptake in the blood or in the muscles. So for example, if you're breathing fast and shallow and through an open mouth, proportionately, there's a lot more air wasted in dead space, because not all of the air that we take into our body reaches the small air sacs in the lungs for gas exchange to take place. Of every breath, the last 150 mil of air stays in dead space, stays in the nasal cavity, in the throat, in the trachea, in the bronchi, the bronchioles. So how do we optimize alveolar ventilation? Well, one is we reduce the chemosensitivity of the body to carbon dioxide. That in turn reduces breathlessness. Number two, we focus on breathing low. We focus on greater amplitude of the diaphragm, but without over breathing. So it's not about telling somebody, now I want you to breed with, you know, lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs. But in the process, you hear people taking these full big breaths. Then you know that those individuals, they are focusing on the biomechanics, but they are sacrificing the biochemistry. So instead, I use the acronym to breathe light, breathe slow, breathe deep. So light breathing is about breathing less air to improve the biochemistry. Breathe slow to down to a frequency of, say, 6 breaths per minute to stimulate the vagus nerve, to exercise the baroreceptors, to increase heart rate variability, to improve resilience, and breathe deep with lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs. And then we bring that functional breathing from rest into physical exercise. Like, how should you breathe when you go for a run? Does it make sense to breathe, mouth breathe fast and shallow breathing? But mouth breathing is inevitably faster breathing because there's less resistance to breathing. And mouth breathing is upper chest breathing. So the mouth is connected with the upper chest. And even just from a psychological point of view, mouth breathing is something that our ancestors did in terms of fight or flight. It wasn't what they did during rest. They were innate nasal breathers. The human being is naturally breathing in and out through the nose. And there are still tribes on earth that do their physical exercise with the mouth closed. Our ancestors, Neanderthals, they did physical exercise with the mouth closed. So it's only the modern day man and woman who are using their mouth to breathe during physical exercise. And when you break it down, it just doesn't make sense, because mouth breathing, it's drying out and cooling the upper airways and the lower airways. It impacts dental health. Mouth breathers more likely to have gum disease and dental cavities. And even runners, endurance runners, are more likely to have poorer dental health because of the drying out of the mouth. Mouth breathing can contribute to exercise-induced bronchoconstriction, not just asthma, but narrowing of the airways, increased colds, increased chest infections, irritation of the lungs, because our mouth doesn't do anything to condition the air coming into the body. Mouth breathing is activating the upper chest, so we're more likely to be in that fight or flight response, whereas nose breathing activates a flow state. And this was in one study back in 1991 by Travis and Dulliard, athletes who breathed through their nose during physical exercise, they were more likely to be alert and relaxed at the same time. Mouth breathing, because it's not getting or activating, because it's not achieving adequate amplitude of the diaphragm breathing muscle, it affects the generation of intra-abdominal pressure. So, for example, functional breathing and functional movement go together. And to generate ideal or optimal intra-abdominal pressure, we need to increase what's called the zone of apposition. And the zone of apposition is the distance from the top of the diaphragm after an exhalation down to the lower two ribs. So in order to have optimal zone of apposition, we need to be able to allow the diaphragm to move back up to its resting position. So for example, then by influencing the zone of apposition, we influence intra-abdominal pressure, and we're more likely then to have functional movement. So functional breathing and functional movement go together. How many athletes have lower back pain? You know, how many individuals have lower back pain? And most people with lower back pain have faulty breathing. So the diaphragm is there to provide stabilization of the spine. It's there for posture. It's not just there for breathing. But even if you look at the diaphragm then and the connections with the emotions, or if we look at the diaphragm and the connections, every breath that we take, it's massaging the internal organs. So for example, people with irritable bowel syndrome and people with conditions of the gastrointestinal tract. So I'm not saying that breathing is a cure-all, but the breath, we need to give it some credit here. Nose breathing is what the human being traditionally has done throughout our evolution. It's about nose breathing, it's about light breathing, it's about slow breathing, and it's about deep breathing. And normally if I'm working with a student, I'll focus on nose breathing first, then I focus on light breathing, then I focus on slow breathing, and then I focus on deep breathing, and then I bring all three together.
If you're listening at home, Patrick just gave you the golden key to health right there. That was awesome. So, and you mentioned this, and it's funny. Well, to me, it just highlights the beauty in creation and the wonderful dance that creation is. But you mentioned carbon dioxide a few times in that. And I think your book could have just as easily been called The Carbon Dioxide Advantage as it could have The Oxygen Advantage.
But nobody would buy it.
That's true.
So, because people think the carbon dioxide is a waste gas. They think, like, how many times have we been told, bring in as much oxygen as we can and get rid of as much toxic carbon dioxide as possible. Like, and you know, this is crazy stuff, because back in 1904, a Danish physiologist called Christian Bohr, he said that carbon dioxide is a catalyst for the release of oxygen from the red blood cells. So we can think of it this way. We take a breath of fresh air into the lungs. Oxygen transfers from the lungs into the blood. 98% of oxygen in the blood is carried by hemoglobin molecules, which are a protein within the red blood cell. But in order for hemoglobin to release oxygen to where it's needed, carbon dioxide is a catalyst for that. But if we are breathing too hard, we get rid of too much carbon dioxide from the blood through the lungs. And as a result, the bond between hemoglobin and oxygen is strengthened. So it's really ironic. The more air we breathe, the less oxygen gets delivered.
That is all. And you labeled it perfectly in the book. You called, like, oxygen the good and carbon dioxide the evil. And that is how we typically think about it. Yeah. But it's a necessity for our body to function properly. I mean,
it's a vital gas. Like, it's the primary regulator of blood pH. People talk about food and they're running around alkaline forming diets, acid forming diets. Don't eat this food. Don't eat that food. And the primary regulator of blood pH is carbon dioxide. It's also a vasodilator. So if you think of 70,000 miles of blood vessels throughout the human body, if you really breathe light, you will experience warmth coming into the fingers. You will experience that the blood vessels, the circulation is improving by virtue of breathing less air. And I think, Tim, you know, many people will understand. If I said to some individual sitting down, if I said to him, listen, take a few big breaths there and see how you feel. More often than not, they'll feel lightheaded and dizzy. So what's going on there? Because the harder we breathe, the main carotid arteries, the carotid main blood vessels to the brain, they constrict. And not only do they constrict, but because of the Bohr effect that I spoke about there, less oxygen gets delivered. So we are literally depriving our body of oxygen when we go into a studio and when we start breathing more air, when we start taking big breaths, when we have our mouth open during sleep, you know. So that's what my goal is. And why you could say, well, I'm totally biased towards what I'm doing. Well, the fact is, I was the mouth breather. I was the person that was hard breathing for 20 years. And it wreaked havoc. It absolutely, you know, and it really reduced quality of life. Because I was a child and a teenager and in high school and in university. And for me to get my grades, I had to study so much longer than my peers, because my sleep quality was affected. And I was also in that state of fight or flight. We know that chronic overbreathing, getting rid of too much carbon dioxide, it arouses the central nervous system. And as a result, then the individual is more likely to be in that sympathetic tone. And we're expecting then, society is expecting children, teenagers, to achieve good grades as a measure of their intelligence. But there's no recognition put on how is this child or teenager breathing during their sleep? How is this child or teenager breathing during the day? Because that's going to influence grades.
And that brings me to my favorite chapter in your book, which is funny because the whole book is great, but I have listened to Finding the Zone at least 4 times because you mentioned all these wonderful things about distracting thoughts and practical thoughts, watching your breath and just getting into that flow state. Can you speak anything about that?
Yeah. So, like, it's how common is it for people that they are living in their heads? You know, their attention is totally in their head. And every now and again, they bring their attention into the present moment. They may go to a restaurant. They have a lovely meal put in front of them. And they have a glimpse of it. For a brief moment, they see the meal. And then they lift up and they take a biteful of that dish. And they taste it. So for a brief moment, they taste the meal. But then their attention goes back up into their heads. Mm. And they're living there. And most of Western society, including myself, I lived in my head. I was constantly lost in thought. And I think part of that was due to fatigue. I think part of that was the belief that it's good to be thinking a lot, because our Western education puts so much of an emphasis on thought, on thinking. And a student who's not thinking things through, that student gets into trouble. But it's okay to teach people how to think. But we also need to teach them how to stop thinking. Mm. We need to bring space between thoughts. And if we look at the human mind, it's a tremendous instrument, but it's a double-edged sword. We can use our mind for practical purposes. We can use the mind to decide on a course of action, to choose. But then we need to bring some space to the mind. However, most of us don't breathe space to the mind. We are living in thought. We are caught in the mind. And we are constantly thinking. And often the thoughts that's going through the mind are repetitive, incessant, self-critical. The mind is racing. People who are anxious have a racing mind. People with depression have a racing mind. People with high stress have a racing mind. And maybe the tool is not, you know, I understand the importance of medication, but maybe the tool is, let's teach these people how to bring space to the mind. And one of the easiest ways of doing it is to breathe light. Here's the reason for it. Now, when one is breathing light, the attention is more likely to be anchored onto the breath. So when we have our attention on our breathing, if you just focus on the airflow coming in and out of the nose, the mind has a tendency to wander. But if you focus your attention on the airflow coming in and out of the nose, and you deliberately slow down your breathing to take less air into the body, the mind is much more anchored onto the breath. So because from a physiological point of view, when we breathe slightly less air, not only are we having our attention on our breathing, which brings a quietness to the mind, but we are also helping to improve blood flow to the brain. We are improving oxygen delivery to the brain. We are having a calming effect of the central nervous system. We are slowing down breathing, especially the exhalation during rest. So the body's relaxation response is activated through the exhalation. If we have a really relaxed and soft and slow prolonged exhalation, the information communicated from the body back to the brain is that everything is okay. And the brain then is going to communicate that information then to the body. So there's a feedback from the body to the brain and vice versa. Because throughout our evolution, whenever we were stressed, we never had slow breathing. Stress is always accompanied by fast breathing. And people who breathe faster are typically more stressed. They typically have a greater agitation of the mind. So we cannot just be doing mindfulness. You know, 2010 to 2013, I had about 3,000 people and I brought together, I called it mindfulness and functional breathing patterns. Mindfulness was developed 2,500 years ago. We lived entirely different then than how we live today. You think of the amount of attention and distraction now, the amount of information overload, the challenges that we are now experiencing. Think of all of the youngsters and the young girls, more so with girls now than boys, who are committing suicide as a result of mental health problems. Think of the pressures that those companies such as Instagram and Facebook are putting on young kids. Those companies have a huge role to play in terms of improving mental health, and they don't really care. because ultimately for those companies, it's about the dollar. It's about the bottom line. But if our children are spending 2 and 3 hours per day consumed, encapsulated on a platform with information and images and likes, what is that doing to the minds of these individuals? And that's why I think the breadth is something that's really, really important. You know, it's ever more challenging now for people to have a quietness of the mind. And we could say there's a number of ways to bring quietness to the mind. And of course, the breath is absolutely one of them. The second way would be to take our attention out of the mind into the body. That if we go for a walk, don't just walk with your attention stuck in your head, but feel it as your feet hits the ground. Bring your attention throughout the body. You know, immerse every part of your attention throughout the body. And another way to do it would be to bring your attention into present moment awareness. As human beings, we communicate with the senses, with sight, with hearing, with touch, with taste, with feel. How often are we fully immersed in present moment awareness? So for me, like back again, it was kind of strange because I came across breathing and I came across the mind at the same time, probably a few months apart. And I was that youngster and teenager with racing mind. And nobody ever taught me to quiet my breathing. Nobody ever taught me to quiet my mind because it's typically not done in Western society. But I went to a hotel and there were two guys, or it was a guy and a girl. They were giving a course on present moment awareness. This is back in 1998. And I sat there for 2 hours. Now, when I listened to them, yeah, I was listening to them for information, but I didn't realize that it was the space between the information, that whatever happened, and I've no idea what happened, but when I left that room, I walked down a street in Dublin called Grafton Street. It was the first time that I actually saw the street. I saw the street. I can remember vividly walking down that street. I remember the colors. I was listening to the sounds. Because it was the first time that I had ever remembered, probably since I was a child, that I had a quietness of the mind. And that was because I immersed myself in 2 hours to two individuals, and they helped to bring that quietness to the mind. Now, the next morning, my mind was a wreck again, but I had a taste of it. And it just gave me, and I knew that something, I never knew what was quiet, because how do you know? You know, you might feel, well, something just isn't quite right, but what is it? And 30 years, it's almost, yeah, 1998, so you're talking about, it's 22 years later. You know, I would say that the two best things that I ever did was the ability to bring some quietness to the mind, the ability to, no matter what's going on in the day, take attention out of the mind onto the breathing, because the breath is always that constant. And the breath is always that companion that when the mind is racing, don't live stuck in the head. And, you know, I understand for people who have anxiety, because I've worked with them and I've made plenty of mistakes. And I understand the frustration that you start focusing on the breath and the mind wanders. And you focus on the breath and the mind wanders, and you focus on the breath and the mind wanders. That's where we can do breathing recovery exercises, small breath holds, holding the breath for brief periods of time. You could do box breathing. You could do, for example, just relaxation. Do nose breathing. Go for a walk with your mouth closed. Have your hands either side of your lower ribs. Do a lateral expansion and contraction of the lower ribs, because slow breathing, nose breathing, low breathing using the diaphragm, all of that helps to bring a calmness to the mind. So it's not just about the psychological aspect about mindfulness. We need to bring in functional breathing. Like, you could have somebody who is focusing on their breath during the day, but going around with their mouth open, irregular breathing, faster breathing, upper chest breathing, sleeping with their mouth open, they are not going to get the benefits of it. Mindfulness does not change respiratory physiology. And in the literature, 75% of people with anxiety have dysfunctional breathing patterns. That's what it is. That is the figure. Now, I gave a talk to psychotherapists, and this is going to give you an example of we as human beings, how closed we are. I gave a talk and I spoke about, and I said, cognitive training is absolutely wonderful, but I said it doesn't change respiratory physiology, and it doesn't. And this has been studied. So you could have a group of clients going to a psychotherapist. Psychotherapist is doing wonderful work in terms of CT or CBT, but the respiratory physiology is not getting addressed. And as a result, there's something missed here. And I explained that to the group of psychotherapists. And I said, it's really important to look at two things. Look at breathing and look at sleep quality. And I'll talk about sleep quality in a moment. I gave the talk, and at the end of it, the psychotherapists weren't interested. And the reason being is because they thought that I wasn't interested in cognitive training. And that wasn't the case. But it just gave me an insight into human beings. We are very resistant to change. We are very tunnel vision. We are very much in our own silos. And we only concentrate on what we've been trained in. And then that makes sense, because you could ask, why doesn't the medical doctor talk about nasal breathing? Why doesn't the dentist? Because mouth breathers have more gum disease, more dental cavities, more bad breath. All mouth breathing children develop crooked teeth. Mouth breathers, their jaws, their face, it doesn't grow to the full extent, or doesn't grow as naturally as it should, as if the mouth is closed. So yeah, that was one thing that I learned there. And so I would say, if any listeners, if they have anxiety, if they're prone to panic disorder, if they're prone to depression, really give breathing a shot. And don't expect results overnight. But I'll tell you this, I lived stuck in my head for 20 years. It's not a nice place to be, because all you're doing is living in thought. You're missing out on everything that life has to offer, because if we go around stuck in our head, how can we see what's in front of us? Aside from a brief glimpse every now and again, as I said, when we go into the restaurant, we look at the meal, we have a brief glimpse of it. For a moment, we are out of the head. And then we take a bite of that meal. For a moment, we are out of the head. But then we are back, lost in thought. How can we have relationships if we're stuck in the head? How can we be creative, intuitive? How can fresh and original thinking arise if there's no gaps between thoughts? And if the mind is racing, we are trained how to think. We are trained how to analyze. We are trained how to break information into tiny pieces. We are trained how to think, but we are not trained how to stop thinking. And when we think of somebody with a racing mind, their mind is full of distractions. They have thought after thought after thought. How can you focus when your mind is bombarded with thought? And then we think of concentration. What is concentration? But concentration is the ability to hold our attention on a subject matter exclusively for a period of time without distraction. A concentrated mind doesn't have bombardment of thought. A concentrated mind is where the active mind is set aside, and that the individual can focus with their absolute and utmost attention on doing what they are doing. Then they have quality of work, then they have quality of relationships, and then they are more successful. Children are demanded to go in, to read material, to remember material. They are demanded to achieve good grades. Society says you must achieve a good grade, otherwise you're going to get a crap job and you're going to be on social welfare for the rest of your life. This requires concentration. We don't teach our children how to concentrate. The school teacher is not teaching the child how to concentrate. How can you teach the child to concentrate? In order to teach the child or teenager or adult to concentrate, we need to teach them how to bring a quietness to the mind, how to create space between thoughts, how to quieten the incessant, repetitive, and often self-critical mind. And if we can quieten the mind, we improve naturally concentration. But we don't just improve concentration by bringing a quietness to the mind. We also increase happiness, because individuals with a racing mind, they are not happy. Mm. The reason that they are not happy is because the content of the human mind is mad. If you were married to your mind for 2 weeks, you would have them divorced. But most of us in Western society, and now with the East, because Eastern society is following very much the West, but most of us, we don't even pay attention to what we are thinking about. We are so lost in thought that we never step back and ask, how does my own mind conduct itself? What thoughts are going through my head? We never just create that space between the observer and the observed to step back and just watch exactly what's going on in my mind at the moment. And that's the first step to bring a quietness to the mind, because when we start realizing just how much time we spend lost in thought and the impact that that thinking is having on our emotions, on how we feel, and draining of energy. Like if any of us have a stressful day, it's very normal that we go to sleep that night and we cannot sleep because the mind is running all of that stuff through the head. So we have a poor night's sleep. We wake up feeling exhausted. And if we are exhausted, we cannot conduct ourselves. We are not productive. We cannot function. That's going to generate anxiety. So coming back to people with, you know, an active mind, the breath will really play a fundamental role there, but we have to give it some patience. You know, I know we have an instant gratification society. I know that we can buy stuff, we hit buy and it arrives to us tomorrow. But focusing on the breath, the goal is to focus on the breath, not to achieve a goal. There's no outcome. So don't spend your attention focusing on your breathing with the primary purpose to achieve something. It's all about the process. Take your attention out of the mind. We have no option with this. I don't know how people go through life living in their heads, because it's not a nice place to be. We are polluting our own minds, but we are not just polluting the space in our head. We are also polluting the environment around us, because if our minds are polluted, it's going to pollute the interactions that we have with others. We cannot even interact with people because we're not even listening to them. We're not connecting with them because we're stuck in thought. And so there's a couple of things I would say for bringing quietness to the mind. One is focus on the breath. Number two, breathe in and out through your nose, especially during sleep. And that's really, really important. Number three, learn to change your breathing patterns to breathe a little bit less air, but be careful when you slow down your breathing and you feel suffocated. When you slow down your breathing and breathe a little bit less air, you will have a feeling of air hunger. But for some people, that feeling of air hunger or that feeling of suffocation could put them into a fight or flight response. So if you have a very strong reaction to the feeling of air hunger, then gently soften your breathing for about 15 or 16 seconds, and then take a rest for about a half a minute or so, and then gently soften your breathing for 15 or 16 seconds. It's very good to give yourself a teaspoon of air hunger, because people with panic attacks, people with agoraphobia, oftentimes it's the feeling of suffocation that's the driver of their symptoms. So if I have somebody coming into me with panic disorder, I want to give them a teaspoon of the suffocation, because I give them a teaspoon of the suffocation, and all that is an increase of carbon dioxide to desensitize their body, to reduce that overly sensitive reaction. And then sleep, you know. So yeah, I think it's we have a long way to go here. And I've just written a book looking at women's, with different chapters, women's breathing. All the stuff that I haven't included in the Oxygen Advantage. The Oxygen Advantage book is kind of performance-based, but I've just completed 140,000 words. So including that, women breathe differently than men. And that's been known since 1915. and because of hormonal changes, especially younger women. So the monthly cycle, for example, days 10 to days 22. So it's the luteal phase post-ovulation, that because there's an increase of a hormone called progesterone, and that's a respiratory stimulant that causes their breathing to be faster and harder, carbon dioxide levels can drop by 25%. And this in turn will contribute to fatigue, pain, exhaustion, anxiety. So the female that's going through this is literally going through this for two weeks every month. And the breath is playing a role there. And if the female realized to slow down their breathing, to breathe through the nose, to improve their breathing patterns so that when they come into day 10 to day 22, their body doesn't react the same way. When we overbreathe or have fast breathing or harder breathing, it increases pain perception and it reduces pain thresholds. The human body, you know, our breath can influence so many different conditions. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is a cure-all, but even if we were just focusing on one dimension of breathing, if we were to focus on resonant frequency breathing, look at the impact of improving heart rate variability on the autonomic nervous system, the automatic functioning of that body over which we don't have to think about. And traditionally, it's got two branches. It's got a parasympathetic response. It's got a sympathetic response. But individuals who have been exposed to stress and chronic stress, that will manifest as reduced heart rate variability. And heart rate variability is a measure of vagal tone. And the vagus nerve is wandering throughout the body. And it innervates all of the major organs. And it feeds most of this information back to the brain. So we want to have, you know, we want that communication from the vagus nerve back to the brain. We want ideal traffic. And if it's not, if that's not the case, if the vagus nerve isn't doing the job that it's supposed to do, the autonomic nervous system is negatively affected. So individuals with post-traumatic stress disorder, with anxiety, with depression, with poor physical fitness, with asthma, with COPD, with irritable bowel syndrome, with hypertension, with hypotension, with diabetes type 1, with fibromyalgia, and the list goes on. Typically, they have reduced heart rate variability. And that's a measurement, as I said, of resilience. And we can improve that for those individuals via the breath. And that's where the research is at. So, you know, put in heart rate variability, and it's not just enough to focus on slowing down your breathing, but increasing heart rate variability is a clinical marker of stress in the human body. If somebody goes to their doctor and they say to their doctor, "Doctor, I'm stressed out," literally the doctor has no way to measure how this stress is impacting that person, but they could measure it via HRV. So HRV is a measurement, but the question is, how can we improve it? How can we improve heart rate variability? Nose breathing during sleep, reduced volume breathing, breathe light with hypercapnia, increases HRV. Breath hold exercises, stimulates the vagus nerve. Slow breathing to a cadence of between 4.5 and 6.5 breaths per minute increases HRV. So, you know, the power of the breath is there. And the research is starting to come up. You know, the science is starting to catch up, which is good.
That is amazing. So earlier, guys, I said that if you were listening, Patrick gave you the golden key to health. But really what he just gave you there was the golden key to being. And it's amazing. Everything you just said is, that's life changing for anybody that's able to take it in. It's yeah. Really world changing.
Yeah, I think it's sometimes the simple things don't get considered, and both the breath and the mind, you know, think less and breathe less.
Yeah. Yes. So you just mentioned you have a new book coming out. What do you know what you're going to call it?
Yeah, it's going to be called Breathing. I can't remember what the subtitle is, and it'll be probably about, you know, yourself 6 months before it's on shelves.
Okay.
But this is a big one in terms of the work that's gone into it. It's a little bit scientific. So I'm always trying to get that balance, because when you're talking about breathing and you're, you know, you want to show the information, you want to show the connections there. And the oxygen advantage was relatively, you know, technical, but I think it's accessible. So I'm hoping to make this a little bit more accessible before it gets out there.
So if people want to know more, I know they can, obviously they should get a copy of the Oxygen Advantage, but if they want to train with you or go to your teachings, what can they do?
Yeah, so for health, for people with asthma and respiratory conditions, or people with panic disorder, anxiety, or sleep issues, go to buteycoclinic.com. And I give 2-hour classes to guide people through the exercises. Now, we also do instructor training. And then for sports performance, the website for that is oxygenadvantage.com. And we do master classes for sports. And we also do instructor training there as well. So yeah, so there's quite a lot of information on both websites.
Awesome. Patrick, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the show this week.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Tim.
Hey guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this week's edition of the Original Strength Podcast. Now, go close your mouth and breathe in and out through your nose.